Mary Jones and Her Bible, a true story retold by Mary Ropes. Chapter 2. The One Great Need. In the homes of the poor, where the time of the elder members of the family is precious, they being the breadwinners of the household, the little ones learn to be useful very early. Often we read of little girls of six who took entire charge of a younger brother and sister, while many children of that age ran errands, did simple shopping, and made themselves of very real and substantial use. And such was the case in the family of Jacob Jones. Jacob and Molly were engaged in weaving the woolen cloth, so much of which used to be made in Wales. So many of the household duties were left for Mary to do. And at an age when children of richer parents were playing and amusing themselves with their dolls or picture books, Mary was busy sweeping, dusting, scrubbing, digging and weeding. Mary fed the hens, who looked after their eggs, for which they often laid in strange and unusual places rather than in the nest. It was Mary who took care of the hive and never feared the bees. It was Mary again who, when more active duties were done, would draw a low stool towards the hearth in winter, or outside the cottage door in summer, and try to make or mend her own little simple garments, while singing to herself in Welsh a verse or two of the old-fashioned metrical version of the Psalms, or repeating texts which she'd picked up and retained in her quick, eager little brain. In the long, light summer evenings, it was her delight to sit where she could see the majestic form of Cader Idris, with its changing lights and shadows, as the sun sank lower and lower in the horizon. And in her childish imagination, this mountain was made to play many a part as she recalled the stories which her parents had told her and the chapters which she had learnt to read at chapel. Now, Cader Idris was the mountain in the land of Moriah, where Abraham was sent on his painful mission with Isaac. Mary would fix her great dark eyes upon the rocky steeps before her, until she almost thought she could see the respected Abraham and his son toiling up towards the appointed place of sacrifice, the lad bearing the wood for the burnt offering. More and more vividly the whole scene would grow in the child's imagination, until the picture seemed to be almost a reality, and she could imagine that she heard the patriarch's voice carried faintly to her ear by the breeze that fanned her cheek. A voice that replied pathetically to his son's question in the words, "My son, the Lord will provide himself a lamb for the burnt offering." Then the scene would change. Night was drawing near, and Cader Idris, assuming softer outlines, was the mountain where the Saviour went to pray. Leaving the thronging multitude who'd been dwelling upon his every word, leaving even his disciples whom he so loved, there was Jesus alone, apart from the Eternal Father's presence, praying, and so refreshing his weary spirit after the work, trials and sorrows of the day. "If I'd only lived in those days," sighed Mary sometimes, "how I would have loved him, and he'd have taught me, perhaps as he did those two who walked such a long way with him on the road to Emmaus, without knowing that it was Jesus. Only I think I would have known him, just through love." Nor was it only the mountain with which Mary associated scenes from sacred history or the Gospels. The long narrow valley in the upper end of which Llanfihangel was situated ran down to the sea not far away at a place called Tawyn. And when the child happened to be there, she would steal a few moments to sit down on the shore, gaze across the blue-green waters of Cardigan Bay, and dream of the Sea of Galilee and of the Saviour who walked upon its waters, who stilled their raging with a word. Sometimes he even chose to make his pulpit out of a boat and preach like that to the congregation that stood upon the shore and clustered to the very edge of the water, so that they might not lose a word of the precious things that he spoke. It will be seen, therefore, that upon Mary's mind a deep and lasting impression was made by all that she had heard. And child though she might have been in years, they were real evidence of an earnest, energetic nature, an intelligent brain and a warm, loving heart. One afternoon, when Jacob and his wife were seated at their looms and Mary was sewing a patch into an almost worn-out garment of her own, a little tap at the door was followed by the entrance of Mrs. Evans, the good farmer's wife, a kind, motherly, and in some respects distinguished woman, who was looked up to and loved by many of the Llanfihangel villagers. "Good day, neighbours," she said cheerily, her attractive face all aglow. "Jacob, how is your chest feeling?"
"Bad, I'm afraid, as I haven't seen you out of late."
"Molly, you're looking hearty as usual, and my little Mary too. Toddles, as I used to call you when you were not much more than a baby and running round on your sturdy pins as fast as many a bigger child. Don't I remember you then?"
"A mere baby, as I said, and yet you'd keep stiller than any mouse if your father were there, and he would make you a story that you would understand. More particularly if it was a story out of the Bible. Daniel and the lions, David and the giant, or Peter in the prison. These were the favourites then."
"Yes, and the history of Joseph and his brothers. Only you used to cry when the naughty brothers put Joseph in the pit and went home and told Jacob that wicked lie that almost broke the old man's heart."
"She's as fond of anything of that sort now as she was then," said Jacob Jones, pausing in his work.
"Or rather, she's fonder than ever, ma'am. I only wish we were able to give her a bit of schooling. It seems hard for the child, is willing enough, and it's high time she was learning something. Why, Mrs. Evans, she can't read yet, and she's 8 years old."
Mary looked up, her face flushing and her eyes filled with tears.
"Oh, if only I could learn," she cried eagerly. "I'm such a big girl now, and it's so dreadful not to know how to read. If I could read, I would read all the lovely stories myself and not trouble anyone to tell them."
"You forget, Mary, we've no Bible," said Molly Jones, "and we can't afford to buy one either, so dear and scarce they are."
"Yes," replied Mrs. Evans, "it's a great need in our country. My husband was telling me only the other day that the scarcity of Welsh Bibles is getting to be spoken of everywhere. Even those who can afford to pay for them get them with great difficulty, and only by ordering them. Poor people can't get them at all. But we hope that the Society for Christian Knowledge in London may print some more soon. It won't be before they're wanted."
"But with all this talk, Mrs. Jones," continued the farmer's wife, "I'm forgetting my errand in coming here, and that was to ask if you'd any new-laid eggs. I've had a large order sent to me, and our hens are laying badly, so I can't make up the number. I've been collecting a few here and there, but I haven't enough yet."
"Mary knows more about the hens and eggs than I do," said Molly, looking at her daughter, who'd not put a stitch into her patch while the talk about Bibles had been going on, and whose cheeks and eyes showed in their deepened colour and light how much interest she had in what had been said.
But now the child got up half guiltily from her low seat, saying, "I'll get what we have to show you, Mrs. Evans." And soon she came in with a little basket containing about a dozen eggs. The farmer's wife put them into her bag, and then, patting Mary's cheeks, rose to take her leave after paying for the eggs. "And remember this," she said kindly, after saying goodbye to Jacob and Molly, and was taking leave of Mary at the door. "Remember this, my dear girl. As soon as you know how to read, if by that time you have no Bible, you shall come to the farm when you like and read and study ours. That is, if you can manage to get so far."
"It's only 2 miles, that's nothing," said Mary with a glance down at her strong little bare feet. "I'd walk further than that for such a pleasure." Then she added with a less joyful ring in her voice, "At least I would if ever I did learn to read."
"Never mind, the likes of you wasn't made to sit in the dark always," replied Mrs. Evans in her cheery, comforting tones. "The Lord made the want and he'll satisfy it. Be very sure of that. And remember, Mary, when the multitude that waited on the Saviour were hungry, the Lord did not send them away empty, though no one saw how they were going to be fed. He'll take care you get the bread of life too, though it seems so unlikely now. Goodbye, and God bless you, my child." And Mrs. Evans, with a parting nod to the weaver and his wife, and another to Mary, went out and got into her pony cart, which was waiting for her in the road, under the care of one of the farm boys. Mary stood at the door and watched the visitor till she was out of sight, and then, before closing the door, she clasped her small brown hands against her chest, and her thoughts formed themselves into a prayer, something like this. Dear Lord, who gave bread to the hungry folk in Bible times, and did teach and bless even the poorest, please let me learn and not grow up in darkness. And then she shut the door and came and sat down, resolving in her childish heart that if God had heard and answered her prayer and she learned to read his word, she would do what she could all her life long to help others, as she herself had been helped.